iTunes, Black Music Month Interview. Ziggy Marley.
Well, all right, we're jamming. You see, I wanna jam in with you. Hey, we're jamming. Well, I hope you like jamming too. Ain't no rules, ain't no vows, we can do it anyhow. Well, I and I will see you through. Cause every day we pay the price, we're the living sacrifice. Jamming to the jamming through.
This is an exclusive iTunes Black Music Month interview. Ziggy Marley.
All right, everybody. This is the Real Talk Podcast, and you're listening to Winter. And everybody knows we're getting down on the Black Music Month celebration, and we're trying to do something a little different. Normally, when you see the Black Music Month celebrations, it normally tends to swing towards hip-hop, R&B, and jazz, and almost kind of excludes everything else. And I thought this year we'd do something a little different and make sure we're inclusive of everything from hip-hop, R&B, blues, jazz, reggae, and world, and et cetera, to make sure we kind of educate the folks on all the music that makes us who we are. So I decided I would get an expert, actually one of the gods of this music, that I just have to say this because I have the utmost respect. And why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself, because I'm sure my fans are going to be thrown off, but they're going to be excited to hear your name.
Yo, it's Ziggy Marley right here, yeah?
This is an exclusive iTunes Black Music Month interview. Ziggy Marley.
Yeah. Love is my religion. Love is my religion. Love is my religion. I'll take you to the temple tonight. All my days I've been searching to find out what this life is worth. Through the books and Bibles of time.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is under the earth.
So first thing I want to do is I want to talk to you about, you know, Love is My Religion. I want to talk to you about the last album and get your perspective and the concept, because, you know, when I actually looked up the album, Love is My Religion, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on these days that is very much so opposite of love. And I just want to get your take on your album.
Well, the album, I mean, it's a conceptual album, you know, it's a philosophical album and exploring love as a philosophy, as a substitute ideology for all the other religious ideologies out there. Love is a substitute that we want to put into place and to replace every other ideology when it becomes to religion. We just want to make it be love. And so the album basically speaks about love and different aspects of love, you know.
Does anything around the world that's going on drive you to make songs like that or make an album like this?
Really and truly, I think what drives me to make an album like this is actually more of a spiritual thing. It's less of a do with what's happening in the world and more what's happening in my mind, like thinking. I mean, and I do think that over the years, what's been happening in the world does play a part, but in particular, that song, when I wrote it, had nothing to do with what was happening in the world at the time. It was just a reply to a question that I was asked, which is, what is your religion? And what came out of my mouth was Love Is My Religion. And then I went and wrote the song. So I don't think I was thinking about what's happening in the world when I wrote the song. I think I was just thinking about the truth, you know, what is really the truth of God and what can lead people to a better life in that pursuit of that spirituality, and love is the answer.
And Ziggy, do you have a favorite song on the album, or two or three even, that you look back
on? Well, Love Is My Religion is one of my favorite songs. I love doing it live, and people respond to it well, and the message. Another song is A Lifetime, which is another song about love. But it speaks of love existing in multiple lifetimes of an individual. And then I would say Still the Storms Come, which is a song about Africa, and is a song about really the neglect of the cries of Africa, whether it be the genocides or the wars or whatever it is. There's a neglect or a lack of concern when it comes to problems in Africa by the world. The world is not concerned about Africa at this point in time, so they let anything happen, any kind of killing, you know, they don't care. So that song kind of reflects that and speaks of the future of Africa as well.
And you know, Ziggy, one of the reasons I wanted to, you know, actually get you involved is because, you know, it seems as though we live so separate as black people, and I know this is not Black History Month, but I wanted to, you know, talk about this. And one of the things that you bring up is, like, you know, the concern in Africa, and, you know, there's so many things that we are uneducated about that, and I know we can't get into everything within this conversation, but I just wanted to ask you, you know, I'll keep it to music for this second, but, you know, like, when you look at reggae music, do you feel as though it's underserved here in the United States and not appreciated the way it probably should be and understanding the way it should be?
Well, I think that within the media, within like the medias and whatever it is, the radios or the video stations, I mean, it is, I don't know what the problem is with it. Maybe reggae music is just too, I don't know, maybe that type is just too conscious, because I notice what is being pushed on radio and TV, especially when it comes to what is being fed to the black youth in America, as listen to this, look at this. It is very one-sided and not very representative of the whole music of black people. That means it only focus on that kind of image that portrays the sexuality, the materialism, the egos of black people, and it don't focus on the consciousness, the social concerns, the revolutionaries, and things like that. So I think reggae music is underserved by the media, but if people can get a chance to check it out, I think people will love it. But it's not being promoted to the youth, them, especially the black youth, them. What is being promoted to the black youth is what we see on TV, and that is the problem with that is not all there is to the black culture, and it seems as if that is being that paintbrush is being used to paint the whole black culture, and that is what black culture is known for in America. It's that whole that hip hop philosophy, what it is today, which is not what it was in the beginning. Because I remember coming up back in the day, hip-hop music was a conscious music, you know, speak of unity, UNITY, and fight the powers, public enemy, and them type of thing. And nowadays, it's more materialistic, sexual, and egos, you know, and that is what is being pumped to the people. So reggae music is has not been given the voice, because I think in some way, the system work to keep the people down.
Right.
And them do that by limiting the knowledge, limiting the truth, and just trying to portray what they want to portray to the people, so them can keep the people kind of in mental slavery, you know?
And when I'm curious, you know, because I know the generation that you speak of, I come from that same generation of listening to all different types of music, but especially when you mention hip-hop, you know, I'm in agreement with you. And I'm curious what the youth over in Kingston, how do they see, you know, the American rappers here, you know, that, again, that follow that trend that you're speaking of? Is it something that's accepted over there? Is it almost looked upon as something entertaining, but yet not something that they do? I'm just curious.
Well, the thing in Jamaica is that Jamaica, we went through that stage too. Actually, we went through that whole stage of material sexuality in the 80s, where when dancehall was just coming out. It was that sexual things. But there was always a balance, because it was never just that. And today, within a few years ago, it started to switch back to a more conscious focus. And that is what I've not seen yet within the hip-hop culture, the shift, the change again. And the return to not saying that everything has to be the same, but at least exposure of more conscious hip hop artists, or conscious hip hop music, or hip hop music that is different than what is being stereotypical, what we know today. In Jamaica, again, it was there for a little bit, but Jamaica, it's different than America. We have our own thing going, and the consciousness. There's a consciousness in Jamaica that never dies, that never goes away, and it always reflects itself in the music. So in that, I don't know why or what is the reason or why that is not happening here in America, but in Jamaica, no matter what was happening, there's always like some kind of militancy, some kind of consciousness that always exists and always has a voice that can be heard on the radio or on the TV, which I don't see here today.
This is an exclusive iTunes Black Music Month interview. Ziggy Marley.
Ziggy, I want to ask you this, you know, in reference to some of these, you know, some of the great movements that have come out of Jamaica, won't you give us an idea of who some of your favorite artists have been and may even be now? You know, maybe some current acts just as much as some people of the past, just a few of your favorites.
Obviously, my father, that goes without saying, Dennis Brown, very, very great artist, Burning Spear, Toots and the Maytals, D.R.I. Sibbles, Gregory Isaac, more recently we have Buju Banton, we have Capleton, well, we have my brothers, Damien, Stephen is here too. We have a group like Morgan Heritage, which is like a group, almost like the family which have and them name Morgan Heritage, and quite a few. The music in Jamaica vibrant, and it's always changing. There's always things happening in Jamaica, you know.
You know, being the oldest son of Bob Marley, you know, and you know your father was considered, you know, a god to many of us who love music in general. You know, does that put some kind of expectation on you to, you know, follow that legacy? I mean, those are some big shoes to fill, and I'm just wondering, do you ever feel that pressure?
No, never. I understand it. I understand that people out there might have expectations or whatever, but it never really affect me in any way, not in any negative way that I know, or any way at all, what people expect. So, but my father is a big influence on me. And so a lot of things that I do reflects his influence on me, not only as my father, but as a musician and as an artist who I look up to and learn from, you know. So it happens, you know, it automatically happens where his influence can be, to me, I know it's there in my music.
And if your father was alive, how do you think he would look at the state of, the state of reggae music, as well as just things that are going on in life in general, just from what you
know? Well, within the reggae music, and this is my view too, and I don't know if he would have feel the way, but I think maybe, yeah, he would have feel the same way I feel, that what happened now, the problem we have within the music now and in Jamaica is the lack of musicianship, the lack of, because what happened with dancehall, or maybe it's the same thing with hip-hop, was that the electronics came in and people started making beats and stuff like that. And so in Jamaica, we lost a generation, missed out on being musicians, because all they needed to do was have a little keyboard and a drum thing and do-do-do-do-do, and that was it. So we're losing musicians, because kids not learning to be musicians anymore, because it's so easy to make a beat on a machine.
Yes.
And that is a problem to me. And to me, the idea of another thing that happened was that people doing multiple songs on the same beat, on the same rhythm, we call it. Mm-hmm. That was cool, but creativity, to me, and this is where I think my father would agree with me, is that without creativity, the music suffer. So if we're just going to follow beats and everybody sing on the same beats, where's the creativity? Where's the music? Where's the creation of new sounds, of new ideas in music? And that is where I say we might have a problem in terms of people not being creative enough. One, because the marketplace demands music that is comparable to what is hot, trends.
Right.
The marketplace deals with trends. Okay, this type of beat is hot, or this type of lyrics is hot. It's key, and that stifles creativity, and that is a problem in music, and in especially because the music industry here in America and the world has become so driven by the commerciality, by money, and so art suffers when creativity becomes less of an asset and more of something that, oh, we don't need creativity, all we need to do is follow this guy's making these type of beats, and that's hot right now. Let's just make those type of beats. Or let's just sing those type of lyrics. That's what's hot right now. Let's sing about whatever. The rims is hot and girls is hot, and let's make the videos. Let's make all the videos look the same, because that's what's playing.
Right.
If I do a video that don't look like a video that's playing, then I won't get played. And so everybody's basically bowing to the marketplace. And that stifles creativity. That stifles art. And that is a problem we face today. Stifling of art and creativity because of money, because the marketplace just not giving the chance to those who do not fit within that certain stereotype or trend or box to get exposed. So people are forced to be trendy, to do what's happening out there, not really to explore their creativity or their art, you know. So that is a problem.
This is an exclusive iTunes Black Music Month interview.
Marley. Who's gonna tell you when it's too late? Who's gonna
non-stop turn and twist. God of his mercy. What's on the turn of a ground? Hear about your mountain Allah. Me all a walk like a champion, talk like a champion. What a piece of money, girl, tell me where you get it from. Knock on your entrance, ram pa pa pam pam. Can't let me in, me have the thing where you are waiting. Walk like a champion, talk like a champion. What a piece of money, girl, how will you get it from. Knock on your entrance, ram pa pa pam pam. Can't let me in, why? Cause you would be more than ten to take your hand and lead you to the promised land. Me 20 foot diving, all you got to do is be true, so let's go.
Yeah, and I think for a long time now, you know, hip hop has been, I think there are a lot of hip hop artists who have been saying, you know, give us the balance. But as what you were pointing out about, you know, about reggae music here in the States, you know, there's a certain amount of consciousness that gets exposed when you allow certain artists to come to the forefront. And whether it be a coincidence or be, as you say, a part of a conspiracy,
right,
for whatever reason, these artists are not getting any kind of action. It's not that they don't make records for the club or
right.
the street and
right.
so on. It's just that they carry a bigger message of think about what you're doing. Think about who you are. Think about your self-respect
yeah.
and respect of your brother.
Yeah, why that shit don't get played, you know? Like, what's the problem? I don't understand the problem, like. Why I don't see that shit more?
You know, I'll go out on a limb and tell you, you know, and it's just my personal and professional and pissed off opinion.
Yeah.
That, you know, you got X amount of people who have no equity in black people
right.
who are actually running media.
Right.
The other thing is
yeah.
you got a bunch of sellouts out here who, you know, again, don't get me wrong, I listen to everything. And if I hear something I think is hot, I'll go for it. But
right.
I can differentiate hearing somebody, you know, talk about taking on a certain type of act or doing something to someone or degrading someone and know how to deal with that versus, say, a 12-year-old child that hears this
right,
when he's
right,
driving
right,
to school
right,
in the morning.
Right, we can do that, yeah.
Exactly. So, but then what happens is, you know, from the top down, corporations come in and basically say, these are the things that people want to hear and see.
Right.
And what they do is they play to the worst stereotypes that portray us.
Right.
And for those folks who get involved in that, the folks who actually participate ought to be ashamed of themselves, man. You know, it's kind of like this, I always use this scene from this movie, Geronimo, it was maybe about 10, 15 years ago.
Mm.
And Geronimo was actually running from the U.S. Cavalry.
Right.
And the way they were keeping up with him is they had this Indian who kept tracking him.
Right.
Everywhere they went. And at one point, the Indian who was tracking them, and Geronimo came face to face, and Geronimo turned to the guy and said, where's your heart?
Right.
You know, in other words, how could you do this to us? And
right,
that's
right,
what
right.
I say to the DJs and the program directors and the rest of the sellouts out there that actually put us on front like this and have us doing things that, and that's aside from the recording artists. I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about the people who have the power to sometimes spread a different message or be able to actually hold themselves up and actually be leaders when they actually turn around and they don't fight when it gets into that corporate room. And I'm not saying everybody doesn't fight. I'm just saying there's too many folks that keep their mouth closed for
sure.
whatever reason. That's my opinion about it. And I'm pissed off about it, as you can tell when you know,
yeah.
if you ask me about it, because I don't duck for nothing. It's not the way it goes.
Yeah, and to me, I mean, I think that, you know, I talk about the system, and, you know, sometimes I say, what is the system? And I say, oh, it's the devil's system. What is it? I don't know what it is, but the system takes pleasure and happiness in seeing the degradation of us. You know, it's like to me, it seemed like a plan, like keep them down. You know, it seemed like that to me. It's the whole conspiracy thing. It's like the system will do it, and the system won't keep it down. The system won't keep it blind. The system won't keep it dumb. And the system won't keep it. Okay, let's just keep on going. Let's just think about money and sex, and that's fine. And they don't need to think about it. It's like they might keep it down. You know
mm-hmm.
what I mean? I'm telling you, because if consciousness was out there, then within the black community, it would be a different thing. I mean, that instead of gangster images and gangsterism being the model, it would be revolutionary.
Right.
that would be the model. You know what I say? So them don't want that to be the model, because them actually don't want things to change. Them want it to stay the same way. So, you know, it's a whole big thing. But I would like to see it change, and I would like to see the images and the lyrics change to a more revolutionary, conscious point of view, and make kids relate to that now. You know, we've been through, and we've been relating to the gangster and the pimp life.
Right.
And all of that. We'll see it. No, you know, we're like, this is something else. It's a change, you know?
Well, you know, the funny thing, Ziggy, is that, you know, we could take on roles that seem to have a void, like playing father, you know, playing leader in your community.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And, you know, just to go back to your idea about the system, you know, I know you remember the show Good Times with JJ and Michael.
Yeah.
Okay. So when the show was being created, you know, they approached Esther Rolle and gave her the script and basically told her, you know, what the show was going to be about. And it was supposed to focus on her.
Right.
And she started reading through the lines, and she realized that there was no lines for father.
Okay.
And the creators of the show said, well, you know, black families don't have a father.
Yeah.
You know, and she told them, I won't do the show. You either give me a father or you don't, you know, and I'll walk off. But that's the kind of thing I'm talking about.
Right.
When there comes a point where you got to have some backbone and stand
someone
up.
Someone has to stand up. Yeah, you're right.
You know what I mean? Because everyone that goes down, 100 or 1,000 more are going to suffer from you not opening your mouth. They think it's okay. It's acceptable to do things to you or to project things about you when you just sit there with a closed tongue. But, you know, I'm a move over to something else. I want to ask you something. You know, when your father passed away, I think you were, what, maybe 13?
Right.
Okay. And, you know, I lost my father at early age, so I want to ask you this question, because there's some things that, you know, even now that I still deal with, you know, and I'm older, I'll say that. So I want to ask you, you know, have you looked back and reflected on your life and thought about what kind of challenges you had, you know, say, during the time of, you know, dealing with your father's grieving, and even just after, you know, those times where you just think to yourself when you're laying in bed, man, I really miss my dad, or
I wish I could. You know, I've been doing that more since I'm older.
Yeah.
Because when I was young, I didn't really think about it, but now I'm older, I'm saying that even more. You know, and I say it to him. You know what I mean? I say it out loud to him, actually. But in terms of, like, let me see. You know, what happened with me is that, you know, I guess there were challenges, but I just kept doing. I kept going on. I kept doing whatever I was doing. I didn't feel sorry for myself. I never really think oh, I don't have a father or whatever. You know, I had a strong family around me. My mother is very strong.
Mm-hmm.
And the experiences that I did have with my father were all memorable experiences. So there's nothing that I can't forget. It's instilled inside of me. So it's enough to keep me going. It was enough to make me get through the challenges, the experiences I had with him before.
Right.
It was just enough. Learning everything that I saw from him, you know, it was enough to get me through. And basically what we learned was actually toughness. There was a lack of emotion, really, and I guess to be that kind of tough thing, you have to really kind of stifle emotion, and I kind of learned that, and that helped me get through the whole thing, you know.
And Ziggy, do you have any special moment or story that you can share with us between you and your father, that you're open to letting us know about? Be positive, negative, whatever, hopefully positive.
There's so much experiences. There's so much stuff. Simple things like foot racing. You know, I don't know why him challenged me to a foot race. I don't know what is why. And he didn't even make me win. You know, like, come, let's race. So, you know, like, we'd go to the country, and he would, you know, very physical race for box, and we play football together. But I would say one of the most memorable things is going to Zimbabwe for the independence celebration with him. It was 1980. and that whole experience, it introduced me to Africa, and it introduced me to the struggle of Africans, and it introduced me to the idea of revolution, freedom fighting, and that was one of the more memorable that I think had an effect on me for the rest of my life in terms of thinking about Africa, thinking about freedom, thinking about human rights, you know, because Africa was really being trampled by these colonialistic powers, you know. So it kind of opened my eye to that whole thing and made me look, even after my father passed, it made me even dive deeper into Africa, into what was happening there, what was happening to the people, why, slavery, all of these type of things.
This is an exclusive iTunes Black Music Month interview. Ziggy Marley.